Gently close your eyes and relax your body. Take a few deep, long breaths. Release them and relax your body. Relax your mind. Feel your entire body. Let us start by practicing loving kindness. Send thoughts of loving kindness to yourself first. Please repeat these positive and loving thoughts in your mind. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. May I be free from May I be free from suffering. May I be free from jealousy. May I be free from danger. May I be free from illness. May I be well. 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 Now, as we experience loving kindness, let us radiate the same loving thoughts to our friends, sing the same thoughts to our teachers, send the same thoughts to our mothers, send the same thoughts to our brothers, send the same thoughts to our sisters, send the same thoughts to our relatives, send the same thoughts to our friends. May my Father be well, happy and peaceful. May my Mother be well, happy and peaceful. May my sisters be well, happy and peaceful. May my brothers be well, happy and peaceful. May my relatives be well, happy and peaceful. May my friends be well, happy and peaceful. Now send your thoughts to the whole world. May all beings be free from anger. May all beings be free from suffering. May all beings be free from danger. May all beings be free from jealousy. May May all beings be free from illness and injury. May all beings be well. May all beings be well. May all beings be be well. May all beings be well. May all beings be now slowly turn your attention to your breath. Every breath you take in and take out is taken mindfully. Focus on your natural, ordinary breath. Our mind thoughts go to the future, or our mind go to the past. That is the mind nature. Keep your mind in the present. Breathe in, breathe out. Again, you think our mind thoughts go to the future, go to the past. That is the nature. Keep your mind present, please. Breathe in, breathe out. Now observe your mind and observe your body. Your body is relaxed and your mind is relaxed. Calm and peaceful. Please bring your palms together in front of your heart. Make a wish for yourself. May I be well. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. May peace be with you. Open your eyes. Please open the number page 4. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Dang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddham saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Anicca vata sankara uppada vaya dhammino uppajjitva nirujjanti tesaṃ upasamo sukho. Sabbe satta avera hontu. Sabbe satta abhyapajja hontu. Sabbe satta aniga hontu. Sabbe satta sukhi attanam pariharantu. Manu pubbam gama dhamma. Manu setta manu maya. manasacce paduttena bhasati va karoti va tato nam dukkha mang veti chakkang vahato padam mano pubbang gama dhamma mano setta mano maya manasace pasannena bhasati va karo tato nam sukhamam veti chayava anapayini. Okay, now we kindly invite our friends. Tyler will present his Dhamma talk.
All right, hi everybody. How y'all doing? I have the great honor of being around here for a long time and serving as the president of the Blue Lotus, and I want to state that my talk tonight is not in that position, so please don't hear me as speaking on behalf of the temple. This is my own talk and my own beliefs, and if I move into any area that is controversial, it's me as an individual, not me as this organization. So I thought I would start out with that little caveat. I also, Rebecca, what's the title of my talk tonight? Something like a Buddhist approach to ambition and slow productivity or something. So, yeah, so if you look up hypocrite in the dictionary, it's a picture of me giving this talk, I guarantee you, because the word slow has never been mentioned in my presence, and lack of ambition has most certainly not been, but it is something I strive for. So I want to talk a little bit about that journey. I'm going to start with the present moment, and then I'm going to go backwards and catch back up. So I am very, very, very legitimately called a serial entrepreneur. I have multiple businesses that I have had for a long time, and God forbid I wake up at 2 a.m., it's very likely I'm starting another one. hopefully by 6 a.m. somehow I've been distracted and that didn't happen, but maybe that's not likely. That's just how I roll. And it's been quite a blessing and an awfully big burden at the same time for anyone around me. But I want to talk about what I do today. So a number of years ago, I made a commitment to myself that after I had been in business for 20 years, if I could ever get to the point where I started and ran businesses that thrived for more 20 or more years, that I would quit working in those businesses. I might keep leading them or owning them, but I would not keep working in them. I made a very determined commitment that I would step out by year 20. And what I wanted to do if I made it to 20 years was then go work with founders and entrepreneurs and business people and anybody with an idea. And I wanted to show them how they could build a business through spiritual practices, through integrity and doing the right thing. Because what I found along my journey in the early days was everybody assumed I must be doing something wrong, I must be screwing somebody, I must be unethical. There can't possibly be nobility and profitability. And I really, really spent most of my career pushing back against quite a bit of labeling and disdain that, frankly, is probably pretty warranted in the business world, but didn't feel authentic to my journey. And so a number of years ago, I co-founded with Grant a company called Good Works, and that is now all that I do, is I spend my time working with people, showing them how they can bring ethics and nobility into their businesses and bring kind of these mindfulness practices that we learn and study and practice here into boardrooms and into incubator labs and into schools and into businesses. I just don't see any separation. In fact, I would go so far as to say, I don't want any practice I learn here not to be applicable out in the real world. So a lot of times, if we get into a lot of the heady intellectual stuff, I probably skip out and go do something different for a minute, because I'm very obsessed with the practical application. And if I can't use it, why do I want to know it, is sort of my philosophy in life. So that's where I am now, but I want to talk about how this got here. And ironically, I have a Google Drive that says Temple Talks, and I've got just years worth of all the talks I've given. And you can definitely see it's like your relationship with money, how to slow down while speeding up. Everything is around this kind of core tenet of my life, which is, business and trying to bring nobility and ethics to it. I dropped out of high school when I was in ninth grade, and I also walked away from any paycheck of any employer at that same time. So what was I, 15, 16, 17 years old in those early days? It was the last time I ever earned a dollar from anyone. And I very, very quickly began building. And I found a point where that building seemed to, because I was already sitting in these rooms through a path of addiction and then coming into recovery, I was able to do this inner inquiry and to say, what's really going on here? What is the root of that, right? Like any of you who are in addiction, you know, it doesn't really matter what your substance is. The question we really could be asking ourselves was, well, what was going on that caused me to go to that substance, right? And so for me, I had this level of ambition and this level of hyperactivity. And I'm talking working for two decades straight, 80, 90, 100 hours a week without batting an eye, like that level of extreme ambition. And what I found at the root of that through the inquiry process in these rooms was a whole lot of pain. And, in my family of origin and my family dynamic, I didn't have any way to get noticed or seen or have any validity because I didn't know how to play sports. I didn't shoot guns. I didn't, I just wasn't, I just didn't fit in. And so my family's really, really lovely and kind people, but we just had nothing to relate But by the time I was 15, I was already sort of like in very scrappy early on entrepreneurial stages of my life. And I noticed that everybody who never paid me any attention started to pay some attention. And so then I'm like, oh, there's some validation there. Let me do a little more of that. And then more validation came. And then I got a little successful at it. And then a whole lot more validation came, right? And so my 20 years has been sort of this process of reconciling my ambition with my true authentic creative drive and trying to let go of that original source, like doing it for validation and praise and recognition, and trying to let go of what I was doing solely for that purpose, and instead looking for who am I authentically? What is my true nature? What part of this is just a creative process? What part of this is just me and a beautiful gift to the world? If I can create and invent stuff and that can help people, that's amazing. But at what cost was that coming at? And so I spent years and years trying to like sift through all that crap, trying to figure out what's mine to do, what is no longer mine to do, what is mine sourced from pain, what is mine sourced from like this really beautiful creative spirit. And it's very, very difficult for me. It's still very difficult for me because I believe we are living in a culture that is literally built upon hustle and grind. The vibe of hustle and grind is as prevalent as the neighborhood bar. We are, in America especially, we are just given so much praise and validation for our achievements, our outer achievements. And that was a really, really, really big struggle for me, trying to figure out what to get rid of, what to keep, how to let go of that ambition, but yet still be a force for good in the world and make profits that do good in the world. Like I've really, 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 really wrestled with that. And so I've done an immense amount of studying and reading, and I brought a couple of books that have really made an impact for me, but I want to talk first about one, I didn't even bring it, a book called The Second Mountain. And The Second Mountain is not a book I encourage people to read because I can summarize it in a minute. And most books, frankly, I don't read because as soon as I capture the essence of it, I like shut it and go do it instead of keep reading about how to do it. That's just the way, my ambitious nature, even in reading. So The Second Mountain talks about the first mountain of our lives is about really cultivating our careers, cultivating our identities, forming our identities, often with work being central to that, right? I think many of us would describe our professions as central to our identity. And I did that at a really high level. I was just so eager to build my identity and build something. And then what this book introduced me to was something I was already experiencing, which is this natural progress that a lot of people who are committed to an inward journey experience, which is you kind of go through that mountain of ambition, and then you are in the valley where it's no longer fulfilling. Like you've sort of been there and done that, and sort of the hustle and the grind and the praise and the acknowledgement and the whatever, the stress of it all, just no longer feels worth it or is gratifying as it was. And I found myself very lost in a space of that's no longer even interesting to me. What do I do now? And when I read this book, The Second Mountain talks about after you go over that mountain of ambition and then you get lost in the valley like I had been, the second mountain is about what am I going to do now that is not for external validation, but for internal satisfaction or for helping the world, being in service to others. What kind of things can I be up to that are giving, to have, give all to all, right? That practice of generosity and generous spirit. And for those of us who do have the ability to invent things that help people, you know, can we do that in a way that really makes an impact on the planet and lifts people up and is not necessarily financially oriented, but much more service oriented? And when I read The Second Mountain, it almost felt like a life preserver to me because I was so lost, feeling so done with the past, and yet not sure what to do with what I had built. Because I did seem to have this inner knowing that there was great value in what I built if I could change my relationship to it, right? Like a lot of people I know have started businesses but then sold them or closed them or lost them, no longer in them. It is a very rare group that I've found where they have stepped out of them but continue to have them be sort of the benefactor of their second mountain life. And that's really, really, really what I wanted to build, was an enterprise that I could fuel my second mountain, my true passion, really orient it towards being a force for good in the world. And so I'm gonna just kind of read something. I gave a speech at my company last week because we crossed a milestone, a financial milestone of $1 billion in sales, and it's a big deal. And so I was tasked with inspiring and being grateful and celebrating this big milestone of ours, but I also was tasked with my inward truth, which is I cannot just celebrate these outer metrics without talking about the truth of how we got there and what we did, because that's now really what my life stands for, is showing people the noble path through it. So I'm just going to read the speech I wrote. It'll tell you the story a little bit, and then I'll talk to you about a few of the principles I've used along the way. 26 years ago, in a shag-carpeted basement in a Sears kit bungalow with red Formica countertops, I started a little business. It quickly moved from I to we. The people inside that we are my highest focus. How do you express inexpressible gratitude? There must be a way. I'll update you when I figure it out. This last quarter, we crossed a milestone I never even considered, let alone set out for, $1 billion in sales. Let's put this in some perspective. $1 billion is $1 multiplied by $1,000 multiplied by 1 million other dollars. If you piled up 1 billion pages of our contracts, the stack of paper would be as high as a 43,333-story building. At 14 feet per floor, that means the building is 606,662 feet tall. In contrast, the Sears Tower is 110 stories, or 1,451 feet tall. And they call that a skyscraper. So just to be clear, that's what's happened here. We built an impossible building. Here's my take on how that happened. Number one, today as you read this sentence, some 3.6 billion people, that's 45% of the world's population, have no access to safe toilets. Knowing this is essential to our success. We are stone cold sober about our blessings, and you do not become part of our we unless you know and live this truth. Number two, I never went to college. I was no good at learning shit I didn't care about, and that single decision allowed me to start businesses early in life without preconceptions, rules, or even a point of view. Being young, scrappy, and naive as F allowed me to do, say, and be things that otherwise could not have been possible. I continue to count this decision as one of my crowning achievements. I remained free. Side note, I'm just finishing an MBA program, and I've never been more sure that only the actual work will teach you how to do something. Number three, I hate positive thinking. I love positive doing. Number four, I found one person who made me more. When it's right, 1 + 1 = 4. Number five, this is my first draft at a roadmap. Here's how it goes. When I was 10, while other kids built Pinewood Derby cars and played baseball at the Y, I was pretending to build businesses and think about how to have things work effectively. I was 17 years old when I received my last paycheck. That's as long as I could stand not executing my own ideas. The desire to create my own thing became too big to contain. Since then, every penny I've made or lost has been chiefly a result of my own intentions. initially with my own effort and ideas, and then as things grew with amazing people around me to help drive forward our collective passion, innovation, and craziness. In part, this is why I hate the term self-employed. In my experience, self-anything is mostly crap. The only way I use the word self is when it comes to motivation. People I know who build amazing things don't typically have the same motivation as others. It's more internal, from themselves. It cannot die. It's never lost. It does tire and strain. However, it has a resiliency you can count on. I am motivated by a burning inside of me that I cannot extinguish. It wakes me up in the night, totally jacked on new ideas, a new way to approach something to make things work, and a framework to execute it. This burning in me is totally protected from the whims of others. I love making things work. If something cool doesn't wake you up at night, keep looking, because real passion waits for nothing. The things that wake you up are the things that create significant change. It's like a hunger that cannot be satisfied. Everything is opportunity. Opportunity to grow or create or learn. I can turn almost any idea into a business. I've had ideas that have lost me lots of dollars and nearly wiped me out. But something inside me never gives up. Thankfully, I've had a few ideas that made those losses harder to remember. I can get knocked down so hard I see stars, but within hours, I'm constantly climbing back up, re-inspired and motivated. I'm hell-bent on the craziest ideas to do the wildest things and make the world work just even a little better. I do not ever remember a day when I wasn't thinking about making things better. A good night's sleep is seriously dangerous for me. If I'm rested up, brace yourself. It's like a song inside a songwriter that out, a painter with a blank canvas. Business to me is precisely the same. However, it's my experience that this wiring inside of me is not usual. People don't seem to be as endearing to a business artist as they are to painters or musicians. If you asked 1,000 people to rank jobs in terms of nobility, you'd find teachers and nurses and humanitarian workers. It's not likely you'd see salesman or businessman on the list. In fact, I find many people adverse to business, especially in the areas that I love most. A while back, in an effort to thank and honor a community that had really helped me in our business, I helped build an amazing community center and art school. We touched thousands of kids' lives, impacting the community enormously and making the world a better place because of this school. But most people involved said, "Don't make it about the money. Stop being so business-oriented." They constantly said things like, "Let's not charge. We're community-based." My dear friend, Venerable Bhante Sujatha, is also a businessman, teacher, and Buddhist monk, all in the same guy. He teaches and speaks worldwide and has a meditation center, the Blue Lotus Buddhist Temple, that offers so much to the community and the world. He hosts workshops and talks and seminars nearly every day. He provides a wide range of deep learning, stuff that dramatically changes people's lives. He gives and gives and gives. And the people know firsthand that they've received something significant. His life and temple are run entirely on donations. And he finds the same struggle and similar comments from people. "Don't charge for that. You're so business-oriented. Are you doing this for the money? Stop asking people for so much. You aren't supposed to be a businessman." We often take long walks and talk about these things. We are both deeply committed to making the world better, and we are both business guys. We simply don't see the contradiction. In fact, we believe they are entirely vital companions. The art school and his meditation center do not exist without business. We're thankful for it. We see nothing shameful in earning resources to sustain and advance our efforts. We are both dumbfounded when people shun us, try to quit us, or believe we're somehow in it for the money. Of course we are. Absolutely. We are in it for the money. How else do the doors stay open? How on earth do you have a seat? How on earth do you have heat in a cold Midwest winter? How do you flush the toilets? Being in it for the money allows the whole place to be in it. We're actually in it for the betterment of the world. And we know that resources are required to ensure that happens. Numbers are the language of business, plain and simple. But I'll tell you, these feelings are radical. People are often offended by both of us. It's just not here in our organizations. These feelings are shared all over the place. We quietly nod as people try to dissuade us. We work on non-judgment and practice compassion, and then we get down to the task. We run our businesses so that our businesses can affect change in the world. I'd like my legacy in life to represent that money and business are not inherently bad or a hindrance to a deep and meaningful life. I don't know anyone, not a painter, a doctor, a priest, a monk, spiritual teacher, or first responder, who doesn't totally rely upon a business structure to navigate their offerings effectively. I believe a business can execute the wishes of the people within it. So it starts and ends with me. And I'm convinced a few key questions I asked and answered over and over and over again got us to where we are. Who am I being? Who do I want to be? What are my core values? Am I adding more love to this world? Am I doing right by people? Am I lifting people up and helping the world be better? What do I stand for? As you can continue to build your life, what questions are you asking and answering? Have you built yourself a roadmap? I want to go through, just very quickly, 10 principles that I think really, really have helped me understand how to live with this huge inferno of ambition in me and somehow find a way to be gentle in the world and do better. So the first one is making sure I'm setting intentions, not just goals. So I really try to align my ambition with deeper values. I really try to get clear on what is this actually going to do in the world. If we achieve this metric, what will happen? This has helped me ensure that my pursuits are meaningful and fulfilling. I've long ago come up with my own definition for a goal. And for me, the purpose of a goal is to define my behavior in the present moment. So I learned that in these rooms, on these cushions, that my most effective, most joyful, most beneficial state is in the present moment. And I got confused because I would be out in the real world where they'd be talking about goals and business plans and things that are always talked about in business. But when I realized that those goals were so valuable, not because I was going to go achieve the goal, but because by knowing what the goal was, I could figure out what behavior I would need to execute today in order to achieve it. And then I just became obsessed with focusing on my behavior today. So I used the goal to figure out the behavior. And then all I did through the practice of sitting in here was practice that behavior, stay present. What's that behavior? Stay on that behavior. And then let it become what it becomes. Sometimes it did lead to those goals. Many times it led to things I never dreamed possible. The next one is practice the middle way. I've tried really hard to avoid extremes by balancing ambition with self-care and relaxation. Last week I worked 47 hours in 4 days, and then I didn't even touch my phone for 3 days. So I'm still extreme, I promise you. But I do extreme on, and now I've learned to do extreme off. Maybe someday I'll blend those two together. We'll see. A moderate approach to things, for me, has been the way that I don't get into a mess. Because if it is a great day, and if I've had too much caffeine and a good song comes on the radio and I'm driving fast, I will think anything's possible and say yes to so much. And then the next day I'll wake up crappy and full of anxiety and like have none of that energy, but I have to now live up to the commitments I made in that too heightened state, right? And so you can see how either end of the middle really can create a mess. Number three, incorporating mindfulness into daily routines. Mindfulness, breathing, body scans, mindful walking, staying present. You guys, our lives are literally, like, if you somebody filmed us in our work, you just die. We have incorporated mindfulness practices into, like, almost every hour because we're up to such big stuff, and yet we don't want to become big. We don't want to become that stress or that ambition or all the fuel. We want to be a steward of it. And so incorporating mindfulness, constantly checking in with, is this a full body yes? My brain says yes all the time, and my body says no. I now have learned through the practice of meditation and sitting in these rooms, pay attention to my body. It's keeping score. My brain will outrun this body 100 times a day. And all that does is create messes that I then have to live up to. And it's so painful. I'm living those most of the time. Number four, right effort. Channeling your energy towards something wholesome and constructive, and you know, as a way to, like, avoid burnout and finding sustainable work ethics. I cannot tell you how beneficial it's been to, like, pay attention to my body and, like, my energy bands and when am I most creative, and really discarding societal rules. I am hyper creative between, like, 2 and 5 a.m. I often get up at between 2 and 5 and create something. I used to be so upset with myself about that, but now I've learned, honor my rhythms, honor that. Just make sure that I then have a counterbalance somewhere else. Number five, mindful goal setting. This one I think is so important. I noticed that a lot of people believe in setting goals that are so big that as long as you get sort of close, you're like, that's better than not getting there. I don't agree, because I've learned how much it matters to have authentic joy and celebration and accomplishment. And so I've learned to be more modest in my objectives so that we can actually hit them and then unified celebration together. Embracing impermanence. I mean, if COVID didn't teach us all this, what possibly could, right? Understanding that success and failure are both temporary. This perspective can help you stay resilient and face the setbacks and prevent excessive attachment to outcomes, right? The next one, regular reflection and self-assessment. Take time to regularly reflect on your progress and assess whether your ambitions are still aligned with your core values. Adjust your goals and efforts as needed. This thing about core values, I find so many of us are operating without contemplation. We have not yet said, well, what do I stand for? We're in a society that's very proud to say what we're against. But I tell you, the more courageous to act is to be for something and to advocate for something. But how do you do that if you don't know what your own core values are? The next one, cultivate gratitude and contentment. You heard it in my speech. My very first line says, how do I thank these people who helped me build this? Right? I wake up every day thinking, how can I add more gratitude? I have used Bhante Sujatha's loving kindness meditation every single morning for like 15 years. I literally scan every person I had an interaction with for the previous day, and I do the may they be well, may they be happy, may they be peaceful from the morning I wake up until the second I go to bed. I picture every person from the day before, and I send them those blessings for like 15 years. You guys, it's grueling. It's awful sometimes. But I've just forced myself to do it, and what that's done is it has created a hardwired lens of seeing people through the lens of gratitude rather than not enough or judgment. The next one is developing compassion and altruism. Integrate compassion into your ambitions by considering how your goals can benefit others. I used to be a very, very proud capitalist. Then I began calling myself a social capitalist. Then I began calling myself capitalist neutral, and I'm about to start calling myself an anti-capitalist. And it's because I've not found a way to truly live in compassion and altruism in a capitalistic society, so I'm trying to figure that out right now. But man, do we have to take a look at, man, these actions might feel noble and healthy to me, but what are the ramifications downstream? What are they? And I've got to keep my mind on that. And then the last one is creating mindful workspaces. I put this one last because I think it's the most important. I joke about this all the time because my husband's a therapist. And I always say, I think 80% of people in therapy just need to leave their therapist's office and go clean their freaking room. I just know they do. Design your environment to support mindfulness and focus. This could include clutter-free desks, right? Regular breaks, moments of silence, Your physical space is so essential, in my belief, to your lived experience. And so many people are living in some sense of chaos, and yet they can't understand why they cannot find inner contentment and peace. Like, please, 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 I love you all coming here to meditate, but go clean your house. It'll feel so much better than an hour on a meditation cushion. Then come back to the meditation cushion. You won't believe how different it is. And then I just, we have these in the other room. Rebecca, I don't know if we sold out, if we still have them, but I've lately become obsessed with this thing called the Rest Deck, and it's 50 practices to resist the grind culture. Why I'm becoming an anti-capitalist. I did not understand just how ingrained this ambition and grind and hustle was pre-wired into me without my knowing. Society is just so exalted it that I didn't even know I took it on. I just thought it was me. I didn't know that it came into me. So I'll give you an example, and then if you guys want to go check them out in the bookstore, you can. I'm just going to pick a random card. I pick one of these every day and just stick it on my desk. You are enough right now. Everything you need to craft a rest practice is within you. You are not the problem. Capitalism is the problem. Your rest work is to liberate yourself from both ways of thinking and being. Resting in a capitalistic system is an act of resistance. Every day you can create a moment of rest by daydreaming. Keep resting. Now, you guys, I am seriously the most ambitious person I've ever known. And I am actively trying to like rest inside of my ambition. I don't want to be less ambitious. I love creating things. I don't intend to stop. But I do intend to change my relationship with it so that I can continue to make sure that it is noble and in alignment with my core values and serving the world in a better way. So check these out if you are also an overproducer like me and you're looking for more opportunity to rest and do a little less and do it better. That age-old saying, less is more. There are some really great tools out there, and I really appreciate all you guys. Hope you guys have a great night. Thanks, everybody.